Good evening. I'd like to call the December 4th, 2012 meeting of the San Francisco County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Present.
Here.
Ms. McAfee?
Present.
Present.
Here.
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has asked to be excused this evening. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk has also asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis will be arriving late. Ms. Herrera has also asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
We have 11 members present.
Thank you. I'd like to proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
And I have a couple of proclamations tonight. The first is for Lifelong. I'd like Executive Director Diane Dawson to come up front. Whereas the Tompkins County Senior Citizens Council, Incorporated, doing business as Lifelong, was established and incorporated in 1952 and is now celebrating its 60th anniversary, and whereas Lifelong serves over 11,000 older adults in Tompkins County, promoting wellness and later life through recreation, education, advocacy, and volunteering, and whereas the 60 to 64 age group is the fastest growing in Tompkins County with an 89% increase in the last 10 years, whereas 10 affiliated senior citizens community groups throughout Tompkins County act independently and together and to provide recreational and educational services for older adults in their own communities and neighborhoods, and whereas Lifelong offers free income tax and Medicare counseling, and whereas Lifelong functions as a welcoming second home for hundreds of participants, and whereas Lifelong has been the sponsor for the Retired Senior Volunteer Program in Tompkins County for 35 years, and whereas the growth and success of Lifelong are measures of the commitment of older adults to the continued enhancement of community life in Tompkins County and the enrichment of the lives of older adults, now therefore I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim December 6, 2012, as Lifelong Day in Tompkins County, and urge every citizen to take time this month to honor our older adults and the professionals, family members, and volunteers who care for many of them. Our recognition and involvement of older Americans can enrich our entire community's quality of life.
Martha, I don't know if this is on. Martha, thank you. Thank you, Frank Proto. Thank you, Pat Pryor. And thank you, partner in crime, Lisa Holmes, our champion of aging processes here in the county. I want to personally thank all of you for the work that you do every day, not only on behalf of seniors, but on behalf of all the communities throughout the county. I know the sacrifice that you make on our behalf, and we're grateful for every hour that you spend. I want to personally invite all of you to come to the Lifelong Open House Thursday afternoon from 2 to 5. We'd love to have you. We're showcasing some entertainment. We'll sing Happy Birthday over cake, and I think you'll have a good time just meeting and greeting and see our new computer lab provided by Triad Foundation, and I invite you to come. We personally extend the invitation tonight, and thank you on behalf of all the seniors. Let's help them age in place and keep economic power here in our county. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Diane. And another proclamation I won't read, but I want to thank Joe for hand carrying this to the Keegan Medical Center on Thursday night at their event. Proclamation in honor of Dr. Rob McKenzie's leadership with Keegan Medical Center. He's retiring at the end of December. Will be replaced by John Rudd. And so we are proclaiming Thursday, December 6th as Dr. Rob McKenzie Day in Tompkins County. So, Joe, you'll bring this to them. And we have two guests that we love to have join us, Brett Bossert from Community Arts Partnership and Gail Holst-Warhoff, our Poet Laureate, joining us tonight. So, Brett.
Thank you, Martha, and thank you to the entire legislature for having us here tonight and for once again honoring the arts in our community. CAP is always very appreciative of both the moral and financial support that Tompkins County gives to all of the arts and arts events that happen in every corner of our community. Community Arts Partnership is our arts council, and we've been sort of administering the Poet Laureate program since its inception back in 2001, one of the many programs that we administer. And some other work that we've done most recently, I just wanted to share. I brought some copies of a recent study that you can just take one of an economic impact study of the nonprofit arts community in our county, which has some very positive things to say about the nonprofit arts and culture organizations that call Tompkins County home, showing that they're not just great, make us feel great, but also support the economy here to the tune of almost $21 million of economic activity every year, and about $2 million in state and local taxes that they contribute back to our county. So the arts are an important part, and they mean business in Tompkins County. And Gail, I'm happy to say, has meant business as the Poet Laureate for the 2 years that she's had the post. She's done an amazing amount of work that she's going to tell you a little bit about, but certainly since my tenure at CAP, she has been the most engaged Poet Laureate we've had, working tirelessly with students and with immigrants and many, many others in our community. So I'll let Gail tell you a little bit about what she's done.
And Brett, talk about the,
yes,
the next.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We do have nominations in hand. The call went out about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and we've gotten several nominations for our next Poet Laureate. And I've already asked some members of the legislature, as well as our previous Poets Laureate, to be part of a selection panel that will review those nominations, and hopefully by this time next month we'll have your recommendation for the 2013 Poet Laureate of the county.
Great. Thank you very much. Gail, welcome.
Thank you, Martha, and good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
It has been really a great pleasure to have this position as Poet Laureate. When I took it on, I had really no idea what it would involve, and I think this position is what one puts into it. I think it can be almost anything. And in my case, I had two pet projects that I wanted to do. One involved immigrants to Ithaca, because I had been involved in various organizations trying to help immigrants to Ithaca. And the other involving water and somehow relating poetry and art to water. I teach a course in biological and environmental engineering at Cornell, together with a hydrologist, about the sort of culture of water in the Middle East and Mediterranean. But I thought maybe I could do some of this in the schools. And after spending a year working with immigrants, I produced a book at the end of each year through my program at Cornell. I run a program in Mediterranean studies at Cornell. The first one involved poems by immigrants to Ithaca, and it's called Far From Home. And if anybody particularly wants a copy, I have a few extra copies with me. Buffalo Street Books I also have copies. I think they're selling them for $5. But I don't think they're going like hotcakes, so I think you could find one there. But the important thing was, of course, to give this book to the immigrants themselves, and they were delighted with it. I worked through the ESL program here, and other immigrants that I had met through my own work, and we had a wonderful reading at the Kitchen Theater, and the book was a sort of present for all of the people who contributed to that project. The second project on water was done in the schools, and I picked two schools because I found, having reached out to various schools, two teachers who really responded and wanted me to come and work with students. And one was Michelle Lesko, who runs an online literary magazine in Ithaca now called Ithaca Lit, and she teaches at LACS. The other is Gertrude Schaefer, who teaches at South Seneca School, a very funded school in many ways. More than 50% of the children are on assisted lunches, and on Fridays they provide extra so that they can have something to take home so that they will make sure they're not hungry over the weekend. These children, because they have a remarkable teacher, have been doing all sorts of exciting projects. They are about to set out tomorrow, two of them as representatives of the school for the United Nations for a program called GEM, Global Education Movement, I think. Anyway, they meet at the UN, and delegates come from all over, not only America, but other countries to this meeting. And these two children began with this project on water. She invited two of the lost boys from Sudan, for example, to come to the school and tell them what it was like to walk through, as children, through the desert with no water. And they began to write poetry about this with me, and we produced a book, which is this one called Ithaca's Waters. And we did a reading downtown with poets, laureate and other poets, and the children. And my goodness, the children's poems stood up remarkably well to the established poets. And instead of reading you one of my poems, I think I will read you what a couple of poems that the children produced, very short poems. By the way, the book is illustrated, for example, with all sorts of nice illustrations. This one's called The Bottle of Life, and it's about bottled water. And it says, "Have you ever thought that a bottle of water could be considered a life? That bottle of water, you see, could be a life to someone. The bottle, unattainable, contains pain." Another poem is called Justice. "Abundance, the water that lies below our feet, helps us get the things we need. Other places around the world can't get to the water below their feet. Scarcity. They try so hard. It takes so much time. They are walking while we're reading. We're talking and they're walking. Fair, equal, proportional in treatment, justice." And I'll end with one very short poem, which I like a lot, by a middle school student from South Seneca School, called From Where to Where. "Where will you be when they draw the last sip of water? Where will they go?" Thank you very much, and you're welcome to take a couple of these if you'd like. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gail. It's been a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm sure we'll see you around town and real deeply appreciate your work with the students and the guests to our community.
Thank you, and if you ever need a poem about compromise or anything else, I'll be happy to oblige.
Thank you. Wonderful. I think you should send that poem to Congress. So, I don't see any members of the public, so or municipal officials. People have other places to be tonight. So, legislators, privilege of the floor. Leslin.
So, before Gail leaves, I do want to say how moved I was by how much work you did with the students. I mean, we've had a number of poet laureates, and it was just very touching to hear the work and hear the students express themselves in the way that you you read. It's brought to mind for me just how people take things like water for granted, and recalling a story of just recently this summer of someone saying to me why she wouldn't get into a pool of water or get into a swimming pool, because at home, you walk miles upon miles upon miles to get a cup of water, and here we are swimming in it. So it's just interesting to hear those stories or those poems that the kids wrote. So thank you for your work on that.
And yes, if you would leave a couple of copies, that'd be great. Okay, thank you. That's terrific. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Desi Frank.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I've got a couple of things. Diane already announced the lifelong meeting, annual celebration or whatever, celebrating their 60-plus years in the community. You're all invited. It's this Thursday, I believe, at 2 or 2:30. Lifelong is in back of the library on Court Street, a little further down the block than we are. However, I want to draw your attention, if you haven't seen it, to an article that was in the Ithaca Journal late last week about my favorite topic, New York State Electric and Gas. I don't know if you had a chance to read the two-and-a-half-page article, but if you haven't, you should. A lot of the things that we brought up over the years about pertaining to consumer advocacy, the shortening not only of the work day, but of the, and this is not to say that NYSEG is not responsive in an emergency. They always have around our neck of the woods. But if you remember, over the last couple of years, there's been a concern about them shortening their workforce, and I think that article really highlights it. There's a number of pieces to it that we really need to be paying attention to because of how much we rely on them in this community. But I thought it'd be wise just to make sure that you folks had a chance to review it. And, Madam Chair, I don't know if I'm going to jump in on another item that is not a public type thing, but I wanted to bring to your attention what one of the committees I chair, the Water Resources Council, because of Kathy Herrera's illness, she had to resign as a legislative member of the WRC. So the last couple of months we have not had a legislative representative there that this board appoint, or Martha is appointed through this board. I go, of course, as the chairman. Dooley attends as an associate member, and sometimes some of you come. But we don't have a legislative person. And if any of you are interested in serving in that capacity, please let me know or Michelle know. And we'd like to get that seat filled. Thank you.
Frank, when does it meet?
When does
WRC meet?
We meet the third Monday of every month at 4:15 at the Transit Center, with the exception of January and February. The third Monday in those 2 months fall on holidays, and we move those meetings to the fourth Monday. And We never have a meeting in August.
Okay.
But by tradition.
Okay.
I should warn you, the newest member of the council always is responsible for refreshments. So, right, Dool?
I think I saw a hand over here. If not, okay, Mike.
I think one of the strengths of our charter system in Tompkins County is that our legislature chooses leadership every year. It makes us think about leadership. It makes us think about where we're going. It makes us think about the possibility of change or not change. Last year, I think we embarked upon a better procedure, which I advocated, and that was that we try to make it more open and transparent, and that people who were interested in serving as chair or vice chair publicly announced their interest in those positions so that they could be talked to by members of the legislature, of course, and members of the public, members of the press, if they were so inclined. I would like to see that happen again this year. And so I'm going to ask folks here, it's my opinion that if you're interested in being chair or vice chair, that you make that publicly known, certainly by our next legislative meeting. Having said that, there's one other item I want to mention. That's our Tompkins County Sesquicentennial Commemoration of the Civil War Commission. I didn't say that right, but I never do. We're sponsoring a community read of the Red Badge of Courage. It's in two sections. The first section was last Saturday at Buffalo Street Books, and the second, the reprise of it, will be tomorrow night at 6 o'clock p.m. at the Tompkins County Public Library. If you were like me, that was required reading in high school, and if you haven't had a chance to relook at it, there are copies available out there, but you might want to come and talk about a remarkable book by Stephen Crane, and where it's about a character who has to face a lot of himself, different kinds of feelings about being in battle, from cowardice to bravery. And come on down. Professor Aaron Sachs is going to lead the discussion at the library tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Peter?
Well, on that note, let me tell you a simpler thing you could do than read The Red Badge of Courage, which relates also to the Civil War sesquicentennial. I went to the movies last weekend and saw what I think was one of the best pictures I've ever seen in my life, namely Lincoln. And I really, coming out of it, I decided I was going to say something here, because I think that it was probably, it was fascinating. It talks about just one moment in Lincoln's life, namely the passage of the 13th Amendment, which is something I never knew anything about. I just assumed it happened. That was all. It was an obvious outcome, but wasn't the least bit obvious. And it describes how a great leader can make something important happen. And it's not the usual picture of Lincoln and Washington as being great perfectionists that never make a mistake and never do anything wrong. It's a real political story. And I don't know what else to say about it, but it teaches us a great deal, I think, about leadership and also about the facts of how things unfolded themselves at the end of the Civil War and afterwards. But it's never easy. It's not complicated. Politics is a dirty, messy business, which we always know. And Mike just spoke for transparency and openness. And one message there: had there been transparency and openness, the 13th Amendment would never have passed. That politicians are sometimes forced into positions where they can't do things that they would like to do, given their character, but they must trade them for things that they feel they must do. And for Lincoln, the must-do was the ending of slavery, and he would go to any length whatsoever to end slavery. And there are not some sights that aren't very pretty in there. Things that someone could be, a president could be impeached for, namely misleading the Congress about what was going on. But had he not, we would not have done that. And I also got a message of, you know, we talk a lot about the separation of church and state and how religion has no place in politics, and you can convince yourself that's not true. That looked like the most beautiful demonstration of the place that religion has in politics, how it can make a small, strong moral core to an individual, which they fight for no matter what happens. And I thought to myself again, it's a miracle that on two occasions this nation needed great leaders, and they got them just in time.
Thank you, Peter. An advertisement for, is it Cinemopolis?
It's at Cinemopolis.
Regal.
No, it's at the,
at the mall?
There. No, it's at Regal, yes.
It's at Regal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Frank and then Pat.
Yeah, Martha, I just want to ask a question of Mike. Mike, that meeting on these Red Badge of Courage is tomorrow night at 6 o'clock?
Yes.
Because there's a presentation about water sponsored by a group responsible for drinking water also at the library. Two different rooms, perhaps? And that's also at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Let me double-check my calendar and make sure I haven't told you wrong.
And I want to endorse everything Peter said about the movie. If any of us did some of the things that Lincoln did in that movie, we'd probably be brought up on ethics charges. But they were all done behind the scenes. It was a good movie. You got to go see it twice, though.
I've been corrected by Marsha Lynch, our public information officer. It is Thursday night, December 6th, at 6 o'clock p.m. at Tompkins County Public Library. Oh. My apologies for that error. Thanks for pointing that out, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. And Pat, and then Pam.
The poetry that we heard tonight, which I thought was wonderful, has made me think of an incident that involves poetry that I just wanted to share with you. But before I do, I also want to second what Peter and Frank have both said about the movie Lincoln. I saw it too, and I fully agree with the comments that have been expressed. I don't talk very often about my years as a public school teacher, 38 years in the public school districts, although some people still regard me as a school marm. But I was substitute teaching during the year that I was pregnant. At the time that I was pregnant, women who were visibly showing their pregnancy, it was preferable that we not continue teaching with our regular teaching assignment, because somehow the visibility of our pregnancy would somehow have some kind of a negative effect on the children. So I was forced to take a leave during that time. However, the school district was very hard up for substitutes, so they had no problem with hiring me to come back as a substitute teacher during the time I was on my maternity leave. So I was teaching fifth grade at the time, but I was hired to come back in during that period of time and teach a group of second graders for a day. And the teacher's plans called for a poetry lesson. And the kids were wonderful. We talked about poetry. We talked about what it means to write poetry. And they went ahead and they made their attempts at writing poetry. And when I collected the papers, there was one poem which has always stuck with me from a little boy in the class. And it was two lines. And there's just something about it that I think was almost profound. It was called The Race. And the entire poem was, "I went fast, but I was last." That was it. And I have never forgotten that.
Okay, Pam, could you top that?
Actually, I have a great one, but I won't. I won't top that. Oh, and I might not be able to. I have a great kid story, but I don't. That is what I wanted to say. I just wanted to point out that I too saw the movie Lincoln and was just absolutely, you know, I was very impressed. It was the acting and everything was just wonderful. But I wanted to point out that this was based on Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, A Team of Rivals. And her portrait of Abraham Lincoln in that is just remarkable. And it creates a human being out of these, you know, we usually see these two-dimensional sort of characters and these sort of platitudes that we attach to them. But the way that she describes him and presents him, and he was a great storyteller. He clearly loved the company of men. He liked sitting around telling stories with the guys. But it was so rich and so wonderful. I mean, it just made a historical figure into something that was much, much greater than any other portrait of a historical figure that I have ever read. So I if you're going to see the movie, you really should also read the book, because the book is really remarkable, too.
Thanks, Pam. It's kind of four books, because there's almost the whole biography of Seward and the two other major cabinet.
Well, the Team of Rivals includes all of them.
Right.
I mean, it includes Seward and Stanton and Blair.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. Okay, book club meeting next week. First we'll go to the movies, and then we'll read.
Prom tonight, right. And then...
Anyone else? Dooley.
I also spent my money up at Regal to see that and thought it was a stunning movie. I didn't come away with Peter's feeling about religion's importance necessarily, but I was struck by the fact that the whole movie is based on 5 pages from Doris Kearns Goodwin's book. So that gives an idea of how much else is in her book. And this was a matter of, what, a few months of Lincoln's life. It was just a very small excerpt, but that's one reason it was able to be so interesting, is that it could go into so much detail about it. And I wish that our politicians today who are meeting in Doha would take climate change to heart and come up with something binding instead of our country suggesting there just be voluntary targets again. That's it.
Thank you, Dooley. Agreed. Anyone else? Mike?
Can I just make one thing? We talked Peter's comments about the 13th Amendment. Cornell University has a wonderful framed copy of the 13th Amendment signed by everybody, including Abraham Lincoln. And that's on display from time to time. And it's every bit or even more impressive than their copy of the Gettysburg Address.
You know, I haven't seen it yet, but I think this question of does the ends justify the means is such a core human question. I look forward to
go for it to
seeing that, and then maybe we will have a bigger, even a broader discussion. All right, anything else? Then let me welcome Lisa Holmes up for a presentation on the recent survey of the needs assessment for senior citizens in Tompkins County. Hi, Lisa. And if you want to take, are you going to sit? You can move the mic. And Dave, and Jonathan, if you would get some of the lights. Okay. That's good.
Okay, can everyone hear me? Is this on?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I'm going to be going through about 10 minutes of slides that to provide an overview, kind of the highlights of our recent needs assessment. And you have in your packet, I believe, the an overview, an executive summary. Just to say that the full report, the needs assessment, and all of the results are available on our website. We have copies in our office, and I'd be happy to provide them to anyone who would like full copies. Okay. Just a word about the methodology. The needs assessment was conducted this past July. We had a subcontract with Horn Research to perform the needs assessment. They'd also worked on the Human Services Coalition and United Way Compass 2 needs assessment, so they've done previous work in the community. This was the first time we offered an online version of our survey, and 66% of our interviews were conducted by the phone, but 34% of respondents responded to us online for the first time. And we had 402 individuals who responded, giving us an adequate sample size to have results at the 95% confidence level. Okay. So just a few brief words about demographics. 55% of our respondents had college or advanced degrees, which isn't surprising for our community, college town. 87% of respondents lived in Tompkins County for 25 years or more. Also, just a note, we do these surveys about every 10 years to this extent, and we try to keep our the questions that we ask fairly similar so that we can compare trends in between surveys. So wherever possible, I'll tell you where we're seeing trends, positive or negative. More on the survey sample here on demographics. You can see on the right-hand side of this pie chart, almost half of our survey respondents were between the ages of 60 and 69. So right away, we're seeing the impact of the baby boomers, not only on our sample, but a little more to say about that. Our sample is heavily weighted toward the younger, older adults, but this is reflective of the Tompkins County population as a whole. And as Diane Dawson mentioned earlier, between 2000 and 2010, we had an 89% increase in people aged 60 to 64 in Tompkins County, the baby boomers. So the higher number of the younger seniors in our survey sample is reflective of the county as a whole. And it's also, you can see the repercussions in many of our survey results. It's reflective of this younger population. That's not to say that the older age groups have diminished. They've also grown in numbers, but just not as drastically. So according to the census, between 2000 and 2010, there was also a 13% increase in individuals age 75 plus. So just a note of caution on that. So in terms of the results, we're seeing a very positive picture of older adults, which is influenced by this younger age cohort. And this is true, but it doesn't tell the whole story. So it's really important that wherever possible, we can look at the data carefully and break down by age and compare age groups wherever that's appropriate. So in terms of, we asked some questions about employment. We had 29% of respondents that were employed, 17% in full-time employment, and 12% in part-time employment. I think since we've been doing these surveys, this is the highest rate of employment that we've seen in the 60-plus population. It's a 5% increase since the last survey, and most of the increase is in full-time employment. So again, that's representative of this younger senior population. Baby boomers are retiring later, and we're also seeing the effects of the recession where people are needing to or wanting to work for longer. The majority of respondents had occupations in the educational, health, and social services sector. We asked a series of questions about housing and housing costs. 88% of our respondents were homeowners, a high rate of homeownership in the county. 10% were renters. We had 22% of respondents that were spending 30% of their income on housing costs. This represents actually a decrease in the housing cost burden experienced by older adults since our previous survey in 2004, 14% decrease, which again is a positive thing. We also saw that 64% of those who reporting high housing cost burdens were women. Also in the home housing sector, we asked questions about home repair needs. The need for major home repair, 33% of respondents stated in this need. This has increased somewhat. For those who expressed that need, 42% had not gotten to it, 38% said it was too expensive. Also, a 22% of respondents stated that there were needs for minor home repairs. And also in relation to housing, there aren't slides on it, but we asked questions about people's plans to move, whether they intended to stay in the county, and what types of housing they were interested in. We're in the process of compiling all of these housing-related results into a memo for the planning department, not to Ed, because we are involved with the planning department on the senior housing components of the county's comprehensive plan. Transportation, we had 88% of respondents who are driving themselves. Again, that's a 10% increase since our last survey. And the percentage reporting transportation problems decreased since our last survey. Again, this could be representative of this younger cohort, larger, younger cohort who are able to drive themselves. We're seeing volunteerism on the rise. In this survey, 42% of respondents stated that they volunteer one or more hours a week, compared with 35% in the last survey. Women are a little more likely to volunteer than men. And, you know, several are volunteering 13 or more hours a week. This slide has a lot of information on it, and it's interesting baseline data for us. This is the first time we asked questions in the survey related to technology. First of all, down at the bottom, the bullet points at the bottom, 82% of respondents stated that they have a computer with internet access in their home. And 80% of respondents stated that they have both a landline phone and a cell phone that they use. And then when we ask questions about what they were using, what they were using technology for in terms of the computer activities, this chart tells us that the majority are using technology a lot for emailing to family and friends. That's in the pink bars there, and researching topics of interest. And whereas people are using technology the least, the yellow bars, for video and phoning to family and friends, Skyping related, and social networking. So technology is not being used by older adults for that as much yet.
Lisa, I'm sorry. Yes. I cannot see. So across the bottom are labels of different activities?
Yes.
Okay.
So if I, let's see if I can use this mouse here. So this is email to family and friends.
Okay.
68.7% are saying that they use the computer a lot for that. Video, phone to family and friends. And here we're seeing 58.1% saying that they never do that. This is social networking, 55% mm-hmm. say they never do that. This is researching health and medical topics. And here we have 48.8% saying that they do that sometimes. And researching topics of interest, 50% say a lot, 35% say sometimes.
Thank you very much.
Sure. A lot of information in one slide. We asked people their most popular ways that the sources that they use most frequently to get their information. And respondents said 71% said they use the television, followed by newspaper, word of mouth, radio, and internet. And with at least an email listserv, Penny Saver, or the senior newsletter, which is our publication. Okay. And then these slides here, I can give you the general gist. This is a look at the most frequently reported health conditions and comparing the responses between 2004 and 2012. The 2004 data is...
What does the black and red mean?
Yeah, 2004 is black, and the red is 2012. So, and the most frequent chronic condition reported is arthritis up at the top. I won't go through them all, but the gist of this slide is if we look at the two survey samples and their responses between 2004 and 2012, the rates of incidence of all of these conditions either decreased or stayed the same across all categories in 2012. So this is, you know, one area where we would say there's a profound effect caused by the younger ages in our sample. I have another slide following this that breaks it down. If we were to separate and look only at those two populations, ages 75 plus, it evens the playing field a little bit more, and you can see that there are some chronic conditions that actually increased since 2004 for people age 75 plus, those being arthritis, heart disease, breathing problems, osteoporosis, diabetes, and glaucoma. So this is one area where that the age in our sample really makes a big difference. Okay. A word on falling. Nearly 23% of respondents said that they had recently fallen or were afraid to fall. And this is a more good baseline data for us, and we've been doing a lot of work locally with the Health Planning Council and others on falls prevention, and we know it's a major concern for older adults. Some more baseline data on food and nutrition. We asked a series of questions following a USDA food security scale, and 5% of respondents are at risk of hunger, which translates to about 750 of the county senior population. Another 11% said that they do not eat at least 2 balanced meals every day. Okay. We asked a question about a series of programs and services and whether people were aware of them. And the highest rates of awareness were for Gadabout, Hospicare, Food Net Meals on Wheels, suicide prevention, and the HEAP program. We know we have some more work to do for some of these programs down here about getting the word out. New York Connects, the long-term home health program, or Nursing Home Without Walls program, Food Net Congregate Meals, health insurance counseling. I think this is one of the final slides here. This is about, we asked about use of prescription drugs. We found that 82% of our county seniors take prescription medications daily, and this is the amount that they take each day. The majority, the highest frequency, take 3 to 5 prescription drugs per day. And I think that's the last slide. In our report, we make some recommendations for action. We're doing a series of these presentations around the community, sharing the results, and we're certainly sharing the results with our partner agencies, our subcontractors, people who are using the information for grants. And we're going to be using this information for planning purposes. And I've been trying to make make these presentations and sum up the results with some notes of caution that this looks like and is, I think, a very rosy or positive picture of older adults in Tompkins County, there are a number of indicators where it looks like the situation has improved, and I think it has. However, there are also older adults in the oldest cohort with chronic long-term care needs that haven't gone away and that for whom we keep working to address their needs. And we have the younger cohort who are relatively healthy and engaged right now in our community, and they will be aging through the ranks in the years to come. With more coming behind them. And so I think it's very important that we continue our planning efforts now in the community across all sectors with housing, transportation, healthcare, and the labor force to meet these growing needs. So again, full copies are available on our website. This is just a tip of the iceberg summary. Our office is happy to delve deeper into any more of those survey results, do cross tabulations if people have, greater interest than what we've compiled so far.
So. Thanks so much, Lisa. Very interesting. Any questions or comments from folks? Mike.
Lisa, that's a really interesting report. Nice breakdown. Not exactly about your report, but I've been hearing in the fiscal cliff talks lately about the possibility of adjusting Medicare eligibility. They've been looking again at the Erskine Bowles Alan Simpson Committee report that I think recommended Social Security benefits at age 69. Is your group looking at if that would affect, for example, putting more people on our welfare rolls or other things like that, if something like that happened? Just wondered.
We haven't studied the effects to that extent in terms of, you know, how whether raising the retirement age, how that may increase welfare rolls. Though AARP has, there are some very good studies about the effects of the various proposals, raising the retirement age or lessening the benefit or changing changing the eligibility requirements. So I've studied those, and I have those resources. If you're interested in more detail,
it's, at some point, just hopefully it's on our radar because we don't want to get hit in a few years hard.
Yeah, absolutely. AARP actually has taken kind of a show on the road in terms of outreach to senior groups and asked them to comment on the various proposals that have been put forth. And depending upon the age of the population that they're surveying and whether they're working or not and how where they are at in their retirement, of course, people have various opinions on what should be done, so where you stand based on where you sit.
Is there any sense that the Affordable Care Act, by the time that would phase in, I know it's not like next year, that the Affordable Care Act would fill in the gap there? I mean, because if people are, the idea is that it's covering people who can't otherwise afford it. So something might, just without really looking into it myself, I've wondered whether that will fill in, and rather than simply you know, eliminating something, there might be something in its place.
I'm not really sure how to comment on that, except that, you know, for this 65 and over population who are already covered through Medicare, I'm not sure how to answer that.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. Peter, and then Leslie.
Yeah. Just to answer your question, I think that the Affordable Care sort of takes care of that for poorer older people because it's the Medicaid part, but for more affluent ones, it doesn't. But the question I had was, Lisa, do you have any understanding why the great disparity in the percent of rise in numbers for the junior seniors compared to the senior seniors?
Yeah.
That first slide. I mean, what's that all about? I thought to myself, well, yeah, sure, the older ones die, but that's not right because they died 4 years ago also. So what's...
It's because the impact of the baby boomers. The baby boomers first started hitting...
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Leslie?
Lisa, could you tell me how did you get that sample of seniors and about how many responded?
Yes. We got the sample through the Senior Circle mailing list, which is what we've used in years past for the survey. And I can tell you more about the... there were about 1,000 people on our list that we tried to get to. And then out of those, we did get to 402. 131 refused. And then the remainder, we were unable to contact for one reason or another, you know, due to repeated phone calls or the number was out of service, et cetera.
So the survey was conducted by phone?
It was conducted, well, largely by phone and with an option if people wanted to fill out via the Internet. But for everyone, prior to calling them, we sent out a letter stating what this was about and who we were and what was going to happen.
Let me ask one last question. There is, I was thinking as I was looking at that, the whole issue around information around care and just thinking that that might be a really good area to survey about how people get that information around long-term care
and if they get the information that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be curious about that.
Yes.
Just a thought.
Thank you. Yeah, we did. We asked how people got their information in general, but we didn't ask about long-term care, so that would be a good. Thank you.
Will and then Frank.
Thank you, Martha. Lisa, and thank you for a very nice presentation. I heard it in the committee, and I learned a lot hearing it again. But I'm wondering if having done this, whether there are any things that leap out to your office of things, unmet needs, or things that we may have to be changing the way you've been operating.
Yeah, fewer things than I thought were, immediately leapt out. I think some of the things where we continued to see needs increase were around home repairs. Those needs continue to increase, and this legislature voted to continue our home repair program, revitalization and home repair program, and for that I'm thankful. Also, people reported there's been a continued increase in caregiving, people providing cares to care to family and friends. And we do a lot in our office to support caregivers, and this just tells us, underscores that continued need. So I would say those two areas in general.
Thank you.
Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Lisa, this is good. For the second time, thanks for doing this. Earlier this week, several of us met at the Chamber of Commerce with the tourism board, or several members of it, and suggested to Fred Bond that he get a hold of you. Some of the information, these are not static numbers, that just people that emerged in Tompkins County since the last census was done. Some of the people that are categorized here are people who came here as tourists, like the area and state. Although that wasn't a question on a direct question on the survey, it would be interesting to find out what that influx is, because as Ed does some long-range planning for needs, there are people who are attracted here for one reason or another. There's people who stay here and have gone to Kendall, sold their homes, and on and on and on. But In long-range planning for 10 years from now, I think some of the housing needs are going to be critical, because the cohort, I know all of us are in that lower cohort, Ed. We're the under 60 group. But in 10 years, some may reach that plateau. But I think that the tourism group really needs to see this presentation.
I'd be happy to do that. And for the first time, we did ask the number of years lived in Tompkins County. So I have more of a breakdown that I could share about that.
Well, because it'll help us on the TCAT board, too, because of the transportation planning. Those slides are related to that. Can you say, one of the very first slides about the home repairs, it was broken down into major repair and minor repair. Can you define a major repair as opposed to a minor repair?
We set the cutoff at $500 or more to fix for a major repair, and less than that for a minor repair.
So a roof would be a major repair.
Sure.
A drippy faucet would be a minor repair.
On the home repair issues, I love the large percentage haven't gotten to it. I'm in that category. And then 14.3% said their homes were not fully insulated.
Yes.
That sounded a little too good to me. Like, in other words, that 86% their homes are fully insulated. I'm going to guess that's like an overestimate.
And, we did ask that same question in the same way in the last survey, and I think that this is an improvement. I think the number did get better. since the last survey. I'd have to look at that.
But. Still, it's a little hard to believe, yeah. 86%. Anyway, mm-hmm. maybe it's great if it's true. All right. Anybody, any other questions? Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Appreciate all the information and all the work. Very, very interesting. So we have another presentation, that's Ed Marks, Commissioner of Planning and Community Sustainability. In your packet page 7, is the resolution that came out of budget and capital plan review, but we are not voting on this tonight.
I know it's a little warm up, but do we have to have the air on?
I know, it's freezing.
It's been freezing in here.
Michelle, do you know anything about the air? All right, have Kathy call us. I'm sure she's watching, right?
Before we start, I just wanted to make a little comment on the Lincoln movie. Everybody else is tonight, so I figured I could too. I did see the movie, but that's not what I wanted to comment about. The day before the movie opened, Doris Kearns Goodwin was speaking in Auburn in a benefit for the Seward House. And I was at that talk. And if you haven't, first of all, if you have never visited the Seward House, it's one of the greatest historic sites in this part of New York State by far, and you really should go. But one of the interesting points she made was that night, which was the night before the opening of the movie nationwide, she had planned this date long in advance to be in Auburn. And she found out a few weeks before that they were going to have the screening of the movie at the White House with all of the cast, producers, directors, and herself that night. And she was in Auburn instead, and she said she was happy to be there, but I guess she's a very nice person for saying that. At any rate, our topic of the evening is somewhat more mundane, but very important to this community, obviously, is the capital plan update, which you'll be asked to vote on next meeting. This plan update is an update of the 2006 plan that was the first time we had ever undertaken a capital plan. First time we had undertaken this kind of a long-range capital plan, as far as I know, for the county, and not that many communities have done it. When we did that plan, we looked around, and there weren't a lot of examples. So I think it's another one of our areas where we're trying to kind of lead the way a little bit. But there's been quite a bit that's changed since the 2006 plan was adopted by the legislature. The plan called for doing something about the health department. Well, we did. We moved the health department to a new facility. We kind of had the issue of the courthouse hanging out there, but nothing really was certain at that point in time. And the courts have, as you know, kind of made it more of a point of that, and we're doing something about it now. We had plans for a record center, actually, in that document. Not needed due to the county clerk's leadership on digitizing records. We anticipated need to invest in a major new building for the public safety building. Now things are being, other alternatives are being looked at currently. And we expected about now to either be doing something with public safety building or a new center of government at the time that plan was done. That was been reviewed over the last year and a half or so and determined not to go forward with that. So another element of the 2006 plan is that the plan suggested or set as a kind of goal a 1% annual tax levy increase for capital expenditures. And actually that public safety building and center of government would have been funded over a period of years with that 1% annual levy increase. Obviously something's happened since 2006 that made it very difficult, and the county did not and was not able to attain a 1% annual levy increase for capital. So the updated plan calls for, in 2014 and 15, a 0.75% levy increase, and that really supports things that most of the decisions have already been made about, things that are underway in the planning process, And then after that, we're able to reduce the levy increase on an ongoing basis to 0.5% per year. And that would support the items as included in the plan. Some of the characteristics of what's in the plan, the major investment over the next 20 years that the plan covers is for maintenance of our facilities and potential some new investment in facilities. And, of course, roads and bridges is the other big piece. Those are pretty close to equal. We have some obligations to TCAT, the library, and TC3, which are included in the budget, matching funds for federally aided projects, our aquifer study program, which is ongoing, and then some money in the plan for technology upgrades. We have in the plan a number of specific projects that have been identified, but we also are moving toward, in both the highway and the facilities, kind of an ongoing capital investment to maintain the quality of our investments in our infrastructure. Some of the specific projects that are in the plan are that public safety building is pushed out a ways, 2024. First of all, that's the only time we could afford it under these new spending arrangements. And secondly, the sheriff doesn't think there's a need for it at this point in time. Courthouse renovations, we know that we will have to be making more renovations of this building based on the plans that have been done over the next few years. Major renovations targeted to 2015. Capital maintenance, this is the first installment of an ongoing capital investment in our buildings and facilities. Legislature relocation, we know about that. That's the 2013 figure. You've already invested some funds in that. Providing bus access to the health department, that the earliest we could get that into the plan would be 2016. After the current phase of ongoing facilities maintenance, we have periodic reinvestments. Basically, we're talking about $480,000 a year ongoing in capital investment to meet the maintenance, scheduled maintenance and deferred maintenance that we're catching up on needs for our buildings and facilities. That's based on a schedule that's in the appendix that's been put together by the Facilities Division. On highways, we still have a number of significant projects in the plan for different road and reconstructions and bridges. These are the main ones right here. We also have a couple things that aren't road and bridge projects that are needed by highway, erosion problem on South Street outside Tumansburg, and some storm drain issue out by Bostwick Road that will have to be dealt with. Those aren't on this list, but they're each, one's $2 million, one's $1 million, and they're in the plan. But we also are moving toward, in highway, getting away from specific project, year-by-year adding projects, and coming up with a more steady level of investment over time. We estimated the need would be $1.8 million a year. There's not room in the budget to add $1.8 million at the beginning, so we phase it in. First 5 years is 1.2, goes up to 1.8, and eventually to 2.4 to kind of catch up and obviously accommodate for inflation as well. As I mentioned, there's other agencies who we have capital obligations to, the TC3 master plan, anticipation of a need to reinvest in facility renovation at TCAT, and the library has indicated a number of things that they anticipate needing in the building in terms of improvements beyond the general maintenance. The plan also includes discussion of solid waste and airport. But as you know, they're both enterprise funds. They don't rely on the tax levy, and they have their own funding streams for those projects. So they're listed in the plan. They're discussed in the plan, but not part of the funding scheme plan. Their revenues cover their bonding costs. And with that, we're going to transition to Kevin, who's going to talk a little bit about some graphs on the long-term implications of the plan as it's proposed.
Thank you. Okay. Everybody's seen the, or hopefully have seen the large sheet or the letter, legal size piece of paper that has the 20-year dollar amounts, really tiny numbers. And I think we're trying to hope to paint the picture with graphs to help where you can see the issues are or how this will work out. And in this one is the timing of the spending. So you can see there that big one in 2024 would be the spending on a new public safety building. And that's the one that really throws these numbers kind of all over the place. But each year we're spending quite a bit of money across less further out. And I think most of that has to do with the fact that we don't know what's going to happen in 19, 18 years from now. This is just kind of showing you what's already existing. So the blue screen, our debt service we already have, and we have to make those payments. The red are kind of the middle category. If you're looking at that large sheet of paper, the middle category, the planned projects that we've been talking about for the last couple of years or more recently added. And then in discussing this 20-year capital plan, these other projects came up that are in the green. And so this is showing you what the debt service will be in the blue and what our tax levy assumptions help get us to. So the years where debt service cost is down below are years where we are saving some money to help pay for the ones that are above that red line. And this is what our reserves in the capital reserves will be under this plan. And again, it's pretty, we're not really saving much money in those first, 7 years? Yeah, 7 years. But then, again, we haven't really identified what the problems or issues we may have to solve in 2020 are. I guess that's it.
Peter.
Kevin, could you go back two slides to the one that had the linear red line and then that one? So can you tell me...
Can you use your microphone?
Yeah, thank you. Sorry. Can you say in words what that means? What does the red line mean?
The red line is the proposed idea of in the first 2 years putting 0.75% of our tax levy from 2012. So they're hard numbers. So it's about $317,000.
Yeah.
Each of those 2 years, and then going forward, we're adding another. To 211,000, and then another 211,000, and another 211,000 to the base of our dollar amount we put towards capital projects. So what we're spending is the blue line. And so there are certain years where we are spending more than we have essentially in the bank.
Right. But what you're saying is that taxes
will have to go up.
Will have to go up constantly.
Yes.
I mean, I just wonder what you envision the tax rate to be in 2032 compared to what it is now, and what because it's going to go up.
Well, the percentage will go down. The percentage based on the prior year will go down every year because it's not as much as next year. So already, this is based on 2012's tax levy, which was 42 million, and now next year's 2013's tax levy is going to be 43 million. So 300,000 on 42 million is higher than it is on 43 million. So it will go up, but it will go up a little less each year.
But we're talking about a percent of the levy, Kevin. So
right.
We're not talking about we have to raise 317 or $211,000.
If I could just throw a couple things.
Well, but these are dollars over here. These aren't percents of anything.
This is dollars.
This red line is in dollars, and it's going up. Now, is that just inflation, or is that more than inflation? In real dollars, are we committed then to a tax levy that keeps increasing or not?
Joe?
That's the plan. I mean, and again, it's not, you're not committing yourself to doing this every year, but you are, and this plan would envision annually increasing the amount of money we levy in property taxes to pay for our capital program. It's a 0.75% increase in the first 2 years and a half point after that every year. Now, perspective is important here because what you're seeing here is only the capital element of our tax levy. So right now, if you look at that graph, about $5 million of our $43 million tax levy is committed to capital. Over that long period of time, 20 years, if I'm reading this graph right, it goes up by $4 million. So if you're looking at the increase in our levy attributable to this capital plan, it's about 10% over that period of time. Okay? So the overall levy, and there's other things that will go along, but we're looking at the capital component. That's the kind of effect on levy. Now, what you also saw on another chart, if you flip to the capital reserves, the last graph, that one, that does suggest that you reach a certain period of time where if nothing else happens, there's no other major projects, you are generating more in tax revenue than you are spending in debt service to pay for your capital program. But what Kevin and Ed have both said is we can only see so far out in the future. So it's reasonable to expect that other capital needs are going to happen. So if you were to continue ramping up the tax levy by that half point a year, you would have excess reserves. You could do those capital projects without raising your levy beyond that level that you saw in the prior graph.
The other thing I would just note, too, is the plan is designed to be reviewed every 5 years. So before you get to those big spikes of what looks like excess levy, you will have reviewed this plan and determined if whether that makes sense to continue on that same track. But clearly, for the next 5 years, there's no surplus funds. I mean, it's up and down, but it's pretty much even with what we projected to need for up until 2020.
Julie? I wish that we had had these to look at as a legislature before I made my unseconded motion to add to the levy for 2013 to get rid of some of the red ink, which on the slide Peter asked you to have up is shown as where the blue line dips below the red line, I guess. And if we had been able to keep it 1%, which was the plan in 2006, that wouldn't be happening. And if we had added a little bit more in 2013, that need not have happened. So there was a reason for thinking it might make sense to do a little more in these first years.
Joe, you look like you want to respond.
Well, no, I just want to make sure that we're reading the chart the right way.
I don't think that's
right. You go red when the blue line exceeds the red. So there's only one in the first five-year period, it looks like, is it 2016?
Yes.
Where it goes red, and then it comes back down to things balancing. So I think what has happened here with between what Ed and the planning staff have done to figure out kind of a structure for us to follow and what Kevin has done in developing a model to try to balance things out, we're getting very close to a break-even point with this 0.75% falling to a 0.5% during the first 10 or so years of this program. And then again, if nothing else happens, you begin to actually accrue additional capital capacity in that 2020 time frame.
Mike?
I'd like to underscore the word plan here. This is a plan. And I think it's been wonderful work by our administration, particularly Ed Marks and Kevin here. Does it mean it can't change? No. It is a roadmap. It's a roadmap of how we ought to try to get where we need to be, which is not having to go too deep in the real property tax levy from time to time when some of the big expenses come up, but rather to have some in the bank in better years and to use some of that bank money in years that we need to do that. But it is biting the bullet starting next year. It means putting that extra money there that we didn't put in the 2013 budget. I think this is a responsible thing to do. It's something that the Capital Plan Review Committee has spent a lot of time talking about. I think it'll make us a stronger county, and I hope I'll turn to David Squires for this, but I would think it would help support our bond rating.
David, you want to do anything more than nod? Do you want to say anything about that? Nodding is good. He's nodding. Okay. Thank you, Mike. Could I ask, you go back to the spending graph. Okay. And I guess I really need to get new glasses, but so that spike is about
2024.
But the dollar amount, what is that?
It is 27 million.
Okay. I would find it interesting to take this graph and add to it our Medicaid expenditures and then our retirement expenditures. Because Medicaid is, you know, 12 and some right now, 12.4. But supposedly by 15, 16, it's going to be flat. It'll stay. It won't go up anymore. And retirement is supposed to start coming down as of
2015.
So that might just be some interesting perspective. What's the dollar amount on retirement? Where would it fit on that?
Local is in the $8 million range. I think gross is in the nines.
Okay. So it feels like if we can get past 2014 or 15, some of the really big drivers that are external, 16 might be, there might be a little bit of relief on it. Frank, doesn't sound like you should.
Yeah, Martha, I don't know that we would want to add that number to those numbers. I think we just want to be aware that, as you describe it, as Joe described it, as those funds will become available to be applied somewhere, and perhaps they could be applied to the 0.75% as opposed to raising the levy. Just one more option so that it could level that line out or tighten that line up a little bit better. But I, frankly, Ed, if you can forecast 20 years in advance and be relatively assured, I just want to know what investments you want us to make as individuals.
Go to the next graph. the next one after that, the last one, I guess it is. That's the cushion you're seeing there, because you can't predict 20 years. This suggests that this plan would give you capacity in the range of time when you can't predict to meet your challenges then. And if you don't need it, then you don't need to raise the money.
Yeah, Frank, I wasn't talking about adding.
I thought I heard you say add, and it scared me.
No. I was just interested in thinking about the time scale of some of the big drivers, Medicaid and pension. We keep talking about when different things are going to happen within a few years.
Don't you believe the state's going to bail us out?
Oh, no, we're on our own, as far as we've gotten what we're going to get. Will?
So if I was reading the graphs right in this chart, the big driver in 2024 is the rebuild of the public safety building. And I haven't been to the committee meetings, and I don't know whether that's a given that that building literally has to be done then, or whether this is in the realm of our best guess of when. And when was that building built? Why are we throwing away a building in the rebuild?
About 85.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in a building far older.
That's a discussion you've got a few years to have. And it's probably shown in 2024 more because that's when we could afford to do it than that's when we know it's going to be needed. There's a sense out there that the building may not, you know, have that life. Although right now there are things being considered that could wipe out the need for a new building. It could be solved. The problems might be solved in a different way, which could really affect those out years when you wouldn't need to have that $24.5 million expense. Perhaps.
And that was where I was going. Whether there are things that we could do short term that would make that building.
Well, we've got money in the plan short term to do some work on the building. And whether that work will include things that can enhance the serviceability of the building beyond just its maintenance remains to be seen, I guess.
And I realize that there's also a state component in terms of what we might have to do.
And that $25 million is there in case we have to, kind of like we have to here. So,
thank you.
Peter?
I have another question. I'm not sure that I've understood everything that was presented here, but summing up a little bit, you have presented, as far as the buildings go, you presented all of the building that we have to do. So this plan that you've done takes care of our building needs. And then I believe you also mentioned road needs, roads and bridge needs. And then the question comes up in my mind that I've always been a little bit unhappy with the way we funded a highway fund where the highway director says, well, we need this much, and then we take a little bit of it away because we say, well, you know, just take a little bit away. Does what you put in for the highway fund, does that satisfy all of our needs for all of the road correction, the road rebuilding and the bridge maintenance for the period of time that you put that on or not?
Well, the estimate from Highway, and of course we've got a new Highway manager who wasn't here when the early thinking on this was done, so
right.
He's got some catching up to do and probably will have more to say about this in the future. But the estimate was that you needed $1.8 million per year. We could not afford $1.8 million per year in the first 5 years, so we got $1.2 and then ramping up. So does it meet what you ideally would like to do in the next 5 years? Maybe not, but it's probably enough to do what you need to do and, you know, have additional funds the second 5 years to help better meet the needs then and then ramp up in the third five-year period. So, and Joe may have something to say about that.
Yeah, this is a supplement to what's in the operating budget. So the operating budget, you recall in the 2013 budget, we pushed up the amount that we spent in annual operating funds for road maintenance to, I recall, $1.6, $1.7 million. That stays. This would augment that. But it would pay for things like the bridges and things like that that you would normally expect to see in a capital plan. But it is an augmentation of what's in the annual operating budget.
I guess I would like to see somehow a complete plan for having our roads and bridges what they should be. Maybe this is it, but maybe
well,
not.
Well, the highway is definitely working on that, and they're looking to update their inventory of conditions on roads and bridges and have a plan. I know from experience having worked with highway over the years that any plan can be changed by one winter or one bad
sure,
storm.
Sure, I know that, yeah.
So it's not an absolute where you can necessarily lay it out, but you have an idea. And then the idea would be that each year, in the budget process, the highway division would present to facilities and infrastructure, at least, the planned use of those funds that would be in the capital budget for that coming year. So they would be having a plan. You would know about what it is, how the funds are going to be used.
Dooley?
I vaguely remember that I think it was a capital plan review committee discussion. It was noted that some of these items maybe need to be removed from this list. For example, the aquifer study has become a target dollar amount in the budget, so it doesn't need to be listed on capital anymore. And I know that the environmental health permit system and the DA case management system were advanced to 2012. And so they're still listed here with a bunch of zeros trailing out after them. I don't know if they should be listed in the update or not at all. The
you mean whether they should be in that big, long table?
In this long version, yes. It would be useful, for me at least, to see the year of decision for some of these projects, if you're going to keep them in, such as the two I just mentioned, where they got dealt with in 2012, so the year could appear after them. That would explain the zeros, I guess. And someone else had asked that when you print this big chart, if you could just continue a row of dots or periods along the line so that one's eye could follow across. So that might be useful, too.
Jim and then Brian.
Talking about deleting projects, we're not voting on this. And would you do that at the next meeting, or would you do that before on the thing that we would actually vote on?
You're asking me?
I am.
I would be happy to see it gone before we vote on it. But if people want a record of it, then don't take it out.
Then I think you should make certain that Kevin has an email with the deletions that you're suggesting.
He probably knows them better than I do, but okay, fair enough.
Well, I can see both ways. I mean, about having it show up here and then, I don't know.
Well, I suggested two different ways to handle it. I think it would be good if the resolution explained that we were counting on 1%, and now there's a reason why we're not doing that anymore. I think it'd be easy to add some language to the resolution that does that. So I will suggest something to Ed and see what he thinks about that. And I think it would be good to either refer to in the resolution, we're either updating the 5-year or the 20-year. I think we're updating the 20-year. So it should be called the 20-year one in the resolution, too.
Brian?
I mean, what we're really talking about here is a capital funding plan and not the actual project plans. Because, Ed, you tell me, in 2006, when this initially started, I'm sure that many of the projects that we're doing right today were never even thought of on that. So it's a movable plan constantly. You know, priorities change, priorities in bridges, roads, you know, everything changes. We're simply trying to nail down a plan for the funding of whatever projects happen to be there, 5, 10, 15 years from now. Unless I'm missing something.
No, I think what we're trying to say is this is what we think the needs are, and this is a funding plan that would meet those needs. Also, it's important to know that we have identified specific needs that will utilize that capacity through 2019, basically. So if anybody has any idea about something else that's not in here that's going to happen between now and 2019, we would have to not do something that's in the plan to fund it using this financing plan of 0.5% a year in tax levy increase. I think if it's used appropriately, it can exercise some discipline in terms of the capital side of the budget.
Mm-hmm. More so with the savings than the spending.
It is a plan. The resolution, I think, makes it clear it's a plan, a guide. Every year you vote on a capital program, it's updated, and what's the budget going to be for the following year. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think everybody should take time to read these slides are great, and I hope you can send us the slides. Some of us might want hard copies. The document that's in our packet is also very important in terms of the assumptions, you know, some of the thinking, the things that aren't in here. For example, the Community Justice Center is not in here. And there's a good reason. I mean, it's not that it was just, we won't do it. That's packet page 14. And it basically, we're talking, because we've been lately talking about leased space, we haven't included anything in this as the solution for the Justice Center. However, if we do turn, as Arell's now looking at, the idea of the Human Services building, renovating that, that would become a capital project. So that's the kind of adjustment that's, you know, would end up changing this as we go along.
I guess that's my point exactly, that this is the project side of this is constantly evolving, and priorities are changing. But this is more or less sets the funding for whatever projects happen to come up as part of a 20-year plan.
Yeah, I mean, I would just kind of think of it as an intention. The legislature, by adopting this, says it's our intention to follow this this funding plan, and whatever you're going to have to adjust it to whatever happens in reality.
Right.
Jim, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, again? That's my point that I would make, that it's a suggested number, and if there's a commitment to do that and you can afford to do that, then obviously you would try to do that. And then, you know, figure in all the changes that would happen naturally during all those years because of building use or misuse or whatever it is, whatever business we're getting in or getting out of. So. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments or questions? I want to also point out that Arell has been a critical part of the team that's put this together, as well as other department heads working with him on what the needs are, but he's really done a tremendous amount of work to get the committee and the project in this shape. So if there's nothing else, then if there are any, I guess, adjustments to the resolution itself, I mean, then it'll come to the legislature at our next meeting. Okay? Great. Also, thank you. Thank you both very much. Appreciate that. The lights over there. Jim's in the dark.
Yeah, thank you. I've really been more involved.
So as far as my report, there is we had a meeting last week with Senator Tom O'Mara, and a lot of you were there, and that was a really useful discussion, and a good discussion, and important to put a number of things on his radar and get his take on issues with the state. And Joe, you've got, while I'm thinking of it, you've got us a meeting on Thursday, this Thursday, with Senator Seward.
That's right, in Cortland. We were advised yesterday by Senator Seward's office he does have time to meet with us Thursday. That's the day after tomorrow at 3:30 in Cortland. So if you can attend the meeting, that'd be great. If I can just kind of explain here, we will be meeting again with the legislative delegation. This year, we were meeting with them basically to let them know what's going on locally, what some of the issues are that we're dealing with, what some of the potential things that we may ask of them in the future. But then when the state budget is presented, my expectation, I think everybody's expectation would be, we're going to want to talk to them about what's in the state budget. So there will be a second round of meetings with the delegation that would occur shortly after the first of the year.
Okay. Thank you. So this Thursday, 3:30 in Cortland. And if anybody else wants to go, we'll talk about carpooling. Yesterday, I was part of a press conference in Syracuse. This is our logo. This is our brand now, Elected Officials to Protect New York. The group that is now more than 550 local elected officials who are working to try to get more transparency and more science done on the issue of fracking before New York State makes a decision. There's a great deal of confusion at this point about what's happening, last week revised regulations for fracking were released, and it was announced the comment period will be December 12th to January 11th. They love them, those holidays. For public comment periods. And I understand that a lot of folks are working on the technical side. I think Liz Cameron is already working on the sort of technical, looking at the regulations, and I hope that the planning department is looking at that too. And one of the issues is certainly that given such a short comment period, any body that has to sort of deliberate on its comments and have public, you know, the comments be issued for public review and then vote on them by January 11th, it's really hard to get, to get that work done. So there's there are a couple of resolutions that are, have been brought by Frank and Dooley. We'll talk about that later. My sense is that I think that they're trying to wrap everything up by early spring, mid-spring maybe. I don't know that my own personal reading of tea leaves, I don't know that it means that they want to go ahead and do it or not do it, but I think they're tired of it. My sense is they want to make a decision. So even though a lot of people have called for a longer public comment period or reopening the ESGEIS entirely for comment, I'm pretty pessimistic about anything that would extend the process that far. So my personal opinion. The Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council, we just got a note today that it meets tomorrow in Binghamton with the panelists who are from the state level who are reviewing the 2012 submissions, the CFAs from the Southern Tier. And it hasn't been included in our the information we received, but in every other site visit that's happened so far, the governor has been part of that site visit, sort of the first part of it, and then for photo opportunities, and then the council actually meets and has a presentation by staff. So I expect that will probably happen. I do not think that the council members will overlap with the governor. I think that's not in the plan. So I guess those are my items. If there are any questions. All right. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. There's a lot going on, a lot of which is finding its way to your agendas over the next cycle. I always feel bad when I give you a short report because it sounds like there's not much going on. I'm going to give you a short report tonight, but it seems to be an incredibly busy period of time right now. Among the things that we are involved in now, and I think, well, I know many of you are participating in it, is the task force looking at TCAD and the funding for TCAD. So I did want to let you know that the group held its fourth meeting of either six or seven meetings yesterday. First meeting was to basically introduce the topic to the task force. The next meeting was to explain what TCAD does and explain some of the financial challenges they are experiencing. The third meeting was to give the tourism community an opportunity to talk about what it does, because you know room tax is among the options that are being considered. So the tourism community, hospitality industry wanted to present an explanation of how room tax money is invested in their activities. Last night began a conversation of options that might be available to help address the financial challenges facing TCAD. It was a spirited meeting. It reminded all of us that it is a competition for scarce resources. A good discussion, and I think over the next couple of meetings, it will come to closure of some form. So, again, it is proceeding. It's meeting now weekly, every Monday evening. And, again, a couple of more meetings on the agenda before we can bring this to closure. As you recall, the outcome of this would be, hopefully, a recommendation that the task force would make to PDAC. And then PDAC could take that recommendation and either embrace it or conceivably come up with something different. So that's ongoing. The only other item that I have beyond the meeting with the delegation, as trivial as it seems, as we sit through these long meetings, it may be the most important. We still haven't decided on the chairs for your new legislative chambers. So I'll be reaching out to you for the next couple of days because we've got to figure out what we're going to do with chairs, and we want to make sure they're comfortable.
We want to have
so. So logistically, I think there'll be some chairs that will be on display in the area that we're going to be able to take a look at, and we'll try to find some meeting times or dates that would work for you to take a look and weigh in as it is on those chairs. So I think that's my report for the night.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? Peter and then Frank.
I have a question about the chairs. There's been a lot of, I've heard a lot of comment about how the meetings are too long. And I wonder if you have considered the option of a standing desk where the people had no chairs. I bet that that would cut down the length of meetings. And also wouldn't cost so much.
Save money, right.
I can tell you, it would.
Have you thought about that?
It's a policy decision. I yield to the legislature.
As the person who does stand through these meetings, I guess maybe if everybody stood, that would help, but I don't know. Frank?
Stools. We need stools. Accountant stools. Joe, we were treated to an email from Greg Potter a couple of days back about a change that's coming up, and we have to erase or change. They're going to archive emails and what. Can you describe what's being proposed and what the timetable is by which we have to do something and what that something is?
Well, I can tell you what's happening. I'll try to recall what the schedule is. We have to archive emails. I mean, emails today are like pieces of paperwork years ago. So as government generates communications, just like we used to keep a carbon copy in our files, we need to keep our emails archived so that they're accessible. We kind of do that now, but imperfectly. And some time ago, a decision was made to invest in an email archiving system, which is being installed almost as we speak. The easiest way to understand this is everything that comes in and goes out is now going to be saved forever. So in terms of, you know, just rules of common sense to be applied, rules of common sense should be applied. But it's from consider this point forward, everything coming in and going out will be archived and accessible. I believe it's going to start this week. I can't recall. I didn't bring Greg's memo with me.
Thursday night.
Well, that's what I was thinking. It is later this week.
Don't we? In what I read, he was advising that if there was something we wanted not to be archived, you know, some of us send just messages, thank you for doing this or thank you for doing that. If there's information that would be a waste of time to archive, that we ought to go back and erase them.
If you have a personal email, for example, you may want to delete it.
How far back do we have to go, and when do we have to start reviewing all those messages?
Well, again, I can't recall if the entire email inventory is archived beginning Thursday. I know the process, I have the same recollection Martha does, at least begins on Thursday. So,
isn't that crazy?
Jim?
I would do it ASAP.
It's my understanding, Frank, not to worry, that the 7 emails you've sent since you started operating the computer are going to be framed, and they're going to keep those in the IT. So, I mean, you could delete your 7 like that.
Do you still have the first one I sent you?
I absolutely do. I was looking at it today, as a matter of
fact. He's got it hanging in his bathroom.
Well, anyone on GroupWise should know that every night they back up. But, you know, everything that comes in and goes out. So if there's something you really wished nobody saw, it's probably too late because it's already saved somewhere. So I had a question about that because, if something's already been backed up by ITS,
I
deleted it on my machine, that's still there, right?
Yeah. I have two words, David Petraeus.
So, Frank, I don't think you have to worry about the ones that say thanks for doing that. I guess.
I'm worried about the 7 Jim was referring to.
Brian?
No,
No, I just, I'm just kind of wondering why we're even talking about this. I mean, anything's foilable. Go ahead. I mean, don't even talk about deleting stuff or whatever. I mean, it's crazy. It's craziness. Let's move on.
Okay. But you won't have access to GroupWise Thursday night. It's kind of like from 5 o'clock on. Okay, thanks very much, Joe. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I have no report.
All right, David Squires, Finance Director.
I have no report.
All right, moving right along. Thank you very much. Are the resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Frank Proto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to add Resolution K. Member file requesting an extension of time for review of the revised regulations for high-volume hydraulic fracturing.
Second by Will. All right, discussion duly.
Shall I use the same letter when I wish to add mine, or do I need to pick another letter?
Well, people should... What? Has another letter. People should have both in their folders. Okay, and they are on the same topic. They are different. There are some differences. We need 10 votes to add either of them to the agenda. You know what? If, let's say, K gets on here, and then during discussion, Dooley, you wanted to move to substitute. Jonathan, does that need 10? It just needs 8 votes. Is that right? If that were the, is that open to us?
I think because the substitute is really basically a move to amend because they're pretty minor things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if either one is on and the other one is substituted, that's fine. Plus, it's kind of hard to believe that one would get 10 votes and the other wouldn't if it was had the votes to substitute it, but... That's an aside, but yeah, I think if either one is on, then the substitute would really just be a motion to amend, which would be fine.
I guess I'm trying to figure out also, should we try to put them both on the agenda now at this
point
time?
Point of order, it doesn't make any sense. The only reason you'd want to put them both on is if you think we ought to pass both of them, and that makes no sense whatsoever. So
okay. It's
that we ought to pass either one or the other. So there's no point in putting the second one on.
Okay. So is that clear enough, folks? All in favor of adding...
Is that agreeable to Dooley? Resolution?
I thought they were equivalent, and to have only one get on seems unfortunate to me. But
well, I would point out, I think you only need 8 votes to substitute at a later point versus people having to choose right now or... Whatever. On the other hand, we could put them both on and then vote one down and vote the other one up. In front of us right now is K. So how many votes to add K to the agenda? Please raise your hand. That's unanimous. Okay. Anything else to be added to or withdrawn?
I would be happy to add L.
All right. Is there a second? Pam seconds L. All in favor of adding L to the agenda? 5. Opposed? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I get 7. 5 to 7? You need to know who. Got it? Okay, thanks, Michelle. Okay, that fails 5 to 7. Jim, did I see a hand?
Well, yes, Martha, but I'm not, it says on a revised edition of the changes in position, please announce. But maybe that means under when we get to the consent agenda?
Yeah, that's okay. not to withdraw.
Then I don't have it.
Okay. All right, then I will go through the consent agenda. If you have anything to be pulled, please just let us know. Resolution A, ID 3842, implementation of 2013 Tompkins County budget memberships. Resolution B, ID, pull that one off.
I don't want to pull it off.
All right.
I want to announce the things that were changed.
Why don't you do that in your report?
All right.
So we'll just go ahead and move it, leave it on consent, and do it in your report?
Yeah, fine.
Okay. Resolution B, ID 3835, changes in positions, various departments. Resolution C, ID 3824, authorizing a multi-year contract with an Eskin company for the preparation of a cost allocation plan for the years 2013 to 2015. Resolution D, ID 3756, authorization to sign drafts, county administrator. Resolution E, ID 3755, authorization for finance director to make year-end transfers, appropriations.
I'm sorry.
E?
Yeah, I have a question.
Resolution F, 3754, town and city budgets and printing of tax rates. Resolution G, ID 3753, approving completed tax rolls and directing the executing and delivery of warrants. Resolution H, ID 3757, date of 2013 organizational meeting. And that is the consent agenda. Can I get a motion? Moved by Frank, seconded by Pat. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Clarification.
The
resolution regarding the various departments and positions.
That is on.
That's
no.
Called.
You pulled it, okay.
Excuse me, but Frank, could you please use your mic? I couldn't hear you.
I was just asking if resolution B on the changes in positions, if Jim asked that that be removed, then he said yes.
Oh. I thought you said no when you talked about doing your report.
Well,
are there changes in this substantive changes?
It's one change. It's 35 hours to 37.5.
So it needs to be.
All right. So we'll pull that one off. Okay. I just thought it was a language thing. Okay. Okay. Let's do that again. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. So I would think I would like us. Should we take our break? All right, let's take a 5-minute break and be back in your seats and after a 5-minute recess. Thank you.